you believe. Assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Cards. Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. I hope your flags have been dusted off and prepared for tomorrow to put them out, the anniversary of 9/11. Yesterday, I went and saw a movie, the Quentin Tarantino movie, Inglourious Basterds, and I've been waiting for nearly 3 weeks to go see this film. I have been hearing very good things about it, and I went and I saw this. One of the things I like about movies in war or having to do with, you know, guns or law enforcement or anything is just to see how they employed tactics, how they employed gun handling, how they employed individual tactics and even small unit tactics. Just, you know, just to see how on the ball Hollywood is. There are some films out there that have had very excellent, excellent people behind the scenes as consultants helping set these things up. In other films, it just falls really short. And then again, in more other films, they just go overboard. For instance, in the movie SWAT with Samuel L. Jackson and Colin Farrell, there's a scene where bad guys are pouncing on and destroying a motorcade. And, the bad guys end up inside the vehicle, the primary vehicle, and SWAT's rolling in with their fingers straight when these guys have been shooting and blowing stuff up, when that's when the time to have a finger on the trigger. So that's an example of overboard. However, I guess I should have realized it's a Tarantino movie, so you're not really going to see any of that. It's more for kind of the shock and awe factor of a lot of things. It was interesting. I described it to a buddy of mine who'd sent me messages, hey, let me know how it is. So I sent him a message after the film was over. And I said, you know, it was pretty decent. Film's a little over 2 hours. The first 90 minutes was kind of slow. Some occasional scenes that were interesting to watch. But they were quick, then they were over, and then there was, you know, more. It just seemed like it was dragging on a bit. And then towards the end of the film, the last 20, 30 minutes were a little bit more interesting. And he shoots me a message back. He says, that's like saying the beer that you were drinking sucked until you got a chance to crush the can. And I thought that was actually pretty funny. It was pretty much on the ball. And I don't know. It was a reasonable movie. It was reasonable. I was a little disappointed. It wasn't what I expected. However, I should have reflected on prior Tarantino movies and realized that, what I was looking for out of it is not the type of movie it's going to be. So I guess for my money, what I was looking to get out of it, it was okay. It was a decent story. It certainly made you feel that there were some righteous things going on in some certain areas, which was nice. A couple of surprises here and there, but it was okay. It was all right. In today's show, we're going to be talking about a federal judge who made a ruling regarding open carry of guns. You're going to be very interested to hear about. Also, a piece from a guest host on the Lou Dobbs show regarding Montana and their new firearms laws. And as well, we're going to talk a little bit about the psychological denial about gun issues. So all those things coming up in today's show, and a little tidbit on whether or not we truly believe the ATF can actually be reformed. We all know that it needs to be. So strap in, stay tuned, go get yourself a cup of coffee, sit right back down. I'll be back in just a minute. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
Just 2 days ago, on September 8th, a United States District Court judge by the name of Bruce D. Black of the United States District Court for New Mexico entered a summary judgment in a civil case for damages against Alamogordo, New Mexico police officers. The judge's straight shooting message told the police the following: leave open carriers alone unless you, quote, have reason to believe a crime is afoot. The fact that the facts of the case are pretty simple. There's a guy by the name of Matthew St. John. He entered an Alamogordo movie theater as a paying customer and sat down to enjoy the movie. He was openly carrying a holstered handgun, conduct of which is legal in 42 states and requires no license in New Mexico, as well as 25 other states. There's just, you can do it. Just an open carry state. I live in an open carry state, Nevada. In response to a call from a theater manager, Robert Zigman, the police entered the movie theater, physically seized Mr. St. John from his seat, took him outside, disarmed him, searched him, obtained personally identifiable information from his wallet, and then, and only then, allowed him to re-enter the theater after St. John agreed to secure the gun in his vehicle. Mr. St. John was never suspected of any crime nor issued a summons for violating any law. Importantly, no theater employee ever ordered Mr. St. John to leave. The police apparently simply decided to act as agents of the movie theater to enforce a private rule of conduct and not to enforce any rule of law. So essentially, here's the deal. If the movie theater didn't want him to have a gun on him, they should have either posted a sign outside that said, no firearms allowed, or gone up to him and said, excuse me, sir, we would prefer that you not have the gun inside the theater. If he failed to act then, it would be a trespassing issue. But no, they called the cops. The guy's not breaking any laws. He hasn't been told he can't carry his gun. So they yank him outside. So here's the facts. Judge Black concluded as a matter of law, that the police violated Matthew St. John's constitutional rights under the Fourth Amendment because they seized and disarmed him even though there was not any reason to believe a crime was afoot. Judge Black's opinion is consistent with numerous high state and federal appellate courts. An example, the United States Supreme Court in Florida versus JL in 2000, which is detaining a man on mere report that he has a gun and that violates a Fourth Amendment. And that the Washington Appeals Court in State versus Casa in 2004, detaining a man observed by police as openly carrying rifles in a public street, violates the Fourth Amendment. Mr. St. John's attorney, Miguel Garcia of Alamogordo, New Mexico, was pleased with the ruling and look forward to the next phase of the litigation, which is a jury trial to establish the amount of damages and possibly punitive damages. Garcia said that it was great to see that the court carefully considered the issues presented by both sides and conclude that the U.S. Constitution prohibits the government from detaining and searching individuals solely for exercising their rights to possess a firearm as guaranteed by our state and federal constitutions. Notably, Judge Black denied the police officer's request of qualified immunity, a judicially created doctrine allowing government officials acting in good faith to avoid liability for violating the law where the law was not clearly established. In this case, Judge Black concluded the following. Relying on well-defined Supreme Court precedent, the Tenth Circuit and its sister courts have consistently held that officers may not seize or search an individual without a specific legitimate reason. The applicable law was equally clear in this case. Nothing in New Mexico law prohibits Mr. St. John from openly carrying a firearm in a theater. According to Mr. St. John's motion for summary judgment is granted with regard to his Fourth Amendment and New Mexico constitutional claims. Defendant's motion for summary judgment is denied with regard to the same and with regard to qualified immunity. Judge Black's opinion and order is welcome news for the growing number of open carriers across the United States. Though police harassment of open carriers is rare, it is not yet as rare as it should be. Over the last several years, open carriers detained without cause by police have sued and obtained cash settlements in Pennsylvania, Louisiana, Virginia, and Georgia. More cases are still pending in Ohio, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. So there you go, Quince. Actually, settlements in Pennsylvania and still other cases pending in Pennsylvania. So I would imagine that those should iron themselves out, having a precedent set. So, Quince, go pack, man. I know you're out there. Get yourself a little cash if they harass you. In Nevada here, where it's an open carry state, many areas of the state, people carry openly quite commonly. There are a few areas where they don't carry very commonly. Most notably in the Las Vegas Valley. Within that valley, you have Las Vegas, North Las Vegas, and Henderson. And, of course, many unincorporated areas of the actual county. You don't see too many people carrying in Clark County, at least not that area of Clark County. I live in Nye County, just this side of Nye County line, of the Clark County line. And in Pahrump, here in Nye County, people carry all the time. As a matter of fact, the rest of the state, people tend to carry most all the time. It's very common. And I was in the bank probably 2 or 3 years ago. And, you know, I'm waiting in line in the bank, and I know some of the people in the bank. They know me. And there was a Nevada Highway Patrol officer, commonly referred to as misdemeanor cops in a felony world. Nevada Highway Patrol officer that was standing in the merchant teller line. And there was a couple other merchants in line. I don't know why the cop was standing there. I don't know if he was, you know, putting all of the ticket funds that they got from doing such a stellar job and getting somebody doing 77 in a 70-mile-an-hour zone. I don't know if he's putting that money in the bank or what, but he's in the merchant line. And I hear everybody over there, the three guy, him and the other two guys, talking about, hey, well, that guy just walked in with a gun. Did you see that? And I was quite surprised to see, or actually hear, experience, this NHP officer saying, oh, yeah, you know, it's legal as long as it's exposed. You know, you can carry it concealed in the bank, too. There's no law against having a gun in a bank and blah, 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 blah. And I was kind of surprised to hear that the guy was actually well-informed. Until then, I realized he was actually stationed here, so it's a kind of thing that he's going to experience. Had it been in Las Vegas, it may have been a very different story. A colleague of mine actually went into his bank carrying a gun in Las Vegas. He actually was carrying two. He had one on his firing side hip, and then he actually had one in the small of his back that he could grab with his other hand. He's never really articulated to me why he feels he needs to carry a gun for each hand and a couple of different spots. But however, the guy's a decent shot. He's you know, pretty heads up, and we'll hopefully I'll get an answer from him someday. I think maybe it's just a little bit of visual shock. Anyhow, he goes into the bank, and this little armed guard guy comes up to him, who's carrying a .30. He goes, excuse me, sir, you can't carry those guns in the bank. And he says, he tells him it's against the law to carry a gun in a bank. So he looks at the guy and he says, well, then, by that matter, would you not be breaking the law right now? Of course, the guy didn't have an answer, and he says, it's not illegal to carry a gun in a bank. He says, unless you have something posted outdoors, it's perfectly legal, and actually goes into some legal jargon with the guy and suggests that he go look up the law before he embarrasses himself any further. So a minute later, you see him actually going behind the secured teller area, behind all the bulletproof glass, and goes back there and starts talking with the bank manager. And all they did was watch him until he was gone. And in fact, there wasn't much of anything else going on. It's just interesting that people have such a view when there's really no crime going on. It's just guns themselves have been demonized, and people with guns must be some sort of a kook of sorts. So it's unfortunate that the media and you know, other folks within the government that are anti-gun, these anti-gun organizations, have all started to demonize the object. And, of course, anybody in possession of that object is then a demon as well. It's almost as though if it were related to to drinking alcohol. It would be the same as somebody buying a six-pack of beer or standing there with a rum and coke in their hands, that they are going to be demonized because they associate with drunk drivers that go out and actually injure and kill people. So that's really kind of the same demonization that we as gun owners get. You hear about the occasional bad guy that commits a crime with a gun, and everybody with a gun is demonized. So it would be the same thing again, that if somebody went out driving drunk and killed somebody, that everybody who drinks shares the blame. So is it the alcohol that's the problem, or is it the person's control over the alcohol and what they do that's the problem? Is it the gun that's the problem, or is it the person who's in control of the gun that has the problem? That's really where it lies. And again, the vast majority of people who own guns are responsible with them. To compare people like me, like you, like everyone listening, with those who commit crime with guns is a total falsehood. It's like taking somebody that goes out and has a glass of wine at dinner and drives home and comparing them with the drunk at the bar who sits there all night long and then drives home plastered a couple nights a week. There's a huge difference between the two. And if you can't recognize that difference, you can't recognize that the gun is a tool, it's an inanimate object, and you demonize somebody who has one, then, you know, we have a lot more to overcome. More after the break.
Have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, live, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
I have to read to you a story called Psychological Denial About Guns. It really, it caveats quite well with what I was talking about at the end of the last segment. It's written by a guy by the name of Daniel White in the first person. So let me read for you his article here. It seems that in many people, a lifetime of bombardment by anti-gun messages and sentiment leads to a sort of suspension of reality when considering gun issues. The indoctrination into the gun control agenda requires a leap of faith and a refusal to consider the issue in any depth beyond parroting back emotion-based arguments. In an article in a student's blog, clearly demonstrates the level of psychological denial required to accept those arguments at face value. This article raved about another student's article being given it a new award from the Austin Chronicle for best way to keep guns off campus. Both the award-winning article and the blog report pushed for the opposition of legislation that would allow concealed handgun license holders the right to keep their defensive firearms with them while on campus. The argument is that allowing potential victims who have jumped through the hoops to obtain such licenses would lead to violence, and the only solution is to keep a total gun ban in place. Of course, we know exactly where that went, how that goes when it comes to Virginia Tech. Nobody had a gun to stop that madman a couple years ago. Of course, this completely ignores the fact that all of these high-profile school shootings occurred in schools while they already have a total gun ban. Those bans aren't working, but we're supposed to just blindly continue on hope that next time the ban will prevent a mass shooting. Now, he continues with, yesterday I was in Columbus, Ohio, scouting locations for the Second Amendment March, and I drove down a street near Ohio State University on my way to have lunch. At one point, I passed a sign that said, drug-free, weapon-free zone. Really? Do they honestly believe that putting up such a sign will keep a drug dealer, armed robber, serial rapist, etc. out of their area? It didn't even keep me from driving through with a gun, and I obey the laws. They might as well have put up a sign that says, crime-free zone. It's no different that businesses post a no guns allowed sign and expect their businesses to be safer when the reality is that they just advertised to any potential robber that all employees and customers have been disarmed and it is safe to rob the place. Both sides of the gun debate have an agenda to push, but it seems that only one side consistently and doggedly relies upon denial to accomplish their goals. So there you go. We have people that just don't seem to get it. Now, I know a number of stores, managers, owners, corporate groups, what have you, would like you to believe that they say no guns allowed in this store because the people who would otherwise be nervous seeing people with a gun, they don't want them to run off if there's a bunch of pistol packers in there. However, what they refuse to see is it's generally places like that where crime can occur. It can occur all over the place, and especially if it's like in a bigger market. Like, say, well, for instance, we've talked about the issues with Costco, right? That would be a great place for someone to have their way because there's a lot of people. It's a big area, and they can make a big statement in there. But if people in there are packing, the guy's going to go down. Now, I have yet to see a no guns allowed sign on the Costco where I shop, so I'm packing in there. I have actually learned that it is not universal through all the Costcos. It might be a policy, but it's not posted outside of all the Costcos. So anyhow, just my point being that they believe that it would offend other customers if they saw you with a gun in there. So they don't want you to have a gun, so these customers aren't offended. Missing the reason why people actually carry guns. Carry guns, so we're not victims. I told you about the lady at Taco Bell who looked at me and said, I've never been next to anybody carrying a gun before. This woman was probably in her late 40s. I said, you've never been next to a police officer? She goes, well, yeah, but are you a police officer? Well, no, I'm better trained than one. You take your average street cop, your average detective, your average guy that carries a gun for a living, and I've got, like, I don't know, maybe a couple thousand more hours worth of training with this thing. Trust me, you're safe, lady. You're safe. It's all good. You know, how likely am I to be a victim today? A little bit of an update here. There are two bills in Congress, one in the House, one in the Senate. The one in the House was introduced by Zach Space and Stephen King, both Republicans, one out of Ohio, one out of Idaho. And then Senator Mike Crapo out of Idaho also introduced the Senate bill, and that is to reform the ATF. Those are Senate Bill 941 and the House Resolution 2296. So S-941 and H-R-2296, both to reform and really guide the ATF to where they're not going to have so much regulatory authority. They're going to actually spell the laws out on how they need to conduct themselves, because the external and internal corruption being perpetrated by the ATF has really gotten out of hand. So please, if those things come up, support those bills, because the ATF really is out of control. Stay tuned, more to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
I'm going to play for you a little piece that came off of Lou Dobbs. It had a lady sitting in for him that night. But it has to do with the whole thing with states' rights when it comes to gun with Montana and with Tennessee. So take a listen.
Tonight, states are stepping up to protect their residents' Second Amendment rights from what they see as the long arm of Washington. Under a new state law, starting next month, any gun made in Montana, sold to a Montana resident, and remaining in that state will be exempt from federal control. Bill Tucker has our report.
There are a few states where the right to keep and bear arms is more cherished than the state of Montana. Governor Schweitzer easily won his bid for re-election last year as he underscored his passion for the Second Amendment in his campaign commercial. So it should be no surprise that Montana was the first state to stand and legislatively challenge the federal government's reach when it comes to guns.
Under the Montana Firearms Freedom Act, the gun must be made in Montana and stay in Montana and be made by a non-federally licensed gun maker. None of the guns that you see here would be protected under that law.
That's because those guns cross or have crossed state lines. But when it comes to a gun made in the state that stays in the state,
the Commerce Clause does not apply. It's just like a radish. If you grow a radish in Montana, you sell the radish in Montana, and you eat that radish in Montana, do you believe the federal government would come out here with ATF or somebody else and challenge us all the way to the Supreme Court? I doubt it. So whether you're talking about a gun or a radish, the Commerce Clause should not apply.
Montana is not alone in its endeavor. The state of Tennessee passed a similar law in June, and the stage for a battle with the federal government has been set. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms has already sent letters to federally licensed gun makers in those states warning that the ATF sees the law as meaningless. Quote, the act purports to exempt personal firearms, firearms accessories, and ammunition manufactured in the state and remain in the state from most federal firearm laws and regulations. However, federal law supersedes the act in all provisions of the Gun Control Act and the National Firearms Act continue to apply. Some constitutional lawyers suspect the Supreme Court would side with the ATF, noting prior rulings have expanded interstate commerce authority and federal law does in fact take precedent. The reaction from the ATF was anticipated, says one of the writers of the bill, who freely admits the law is meant to be a finger in the eye of the federal government.
That's the purpose of the Montana Firearms Freedom Act, to be able to mount that challenge to Congress to be able to regulate everything under the sun under the guise of regulating interstate commerce.
And he has a strong ally in the governor, who it would seem might be at odds with the president, who is very pro-gun control, who is also a fellow Democrat.
But when the federal government comes in and says, we want to be your daddy, we want to tell you how to live your life, that's where we draw the line and say, whoa, not in Montana.
According to the Montana Shooting Sports Association, 95% of homes contain a firearm in Montana. And the feeling among many there is that the thing to fear the most is not a person with a gun, but a government that would take that gun away. Bill Tucker, CNN, Missoula, Montana.
And in a legal twist, the groups which helped write and pass the Montana Firearms Freedom Act plan to preempt federal challenges by testing the law in court themselves. They want to make sure the law is constitutionally defensible against any future lawsuits from Washington.
You know, I got to tell you, it's interesting. Thomas Jefferson was the one who said that the Tree of Liberty needs to be was watered with the blood of tyrants and patriots, for that is its natural manure, its natural fertilizer. I got to tell you, he also said that it, should it ever go so long as 20 years without a revolution of the people against the government, that the people would begin to forget and that the government would seize more and more control. The last time there's any kind of a revolution, it was called the Civil War. And many people are under the incredibly false belief that the Civil War, the Confederate States, it was over slavery. It had very, very little to do with slavery. Slavery was not the hinge pin on this whole deal. Really, because there was still slavery in the northern parts of the state, the northern states at the time. The thing is, it was really about the idea of the government taking too much control away from the states and away from the people. So they tried to handle it peacefully. And then once the peaceful works in Washington didn't work out, they said, you know what? Fine. We're going to secede. We are our own states. And a state by definition is a country. So essentially, we are many different small countries that all come together and kind of join. Well, we're not going to be with you guys, the United States, anymore. We're going to be the Confederate States. So, you know, go take a flying leap and go away. Well, that was its own version of a revolution. Really, under Lincoln, with all of this going on, states' rights went away. At the end of the war, states' rights were pretty much gone. The 10th Amendment didn't mean much. They used to say, the United States are. Now, ever since the Civil War, it comes out as the United States is. As though we are just one big lump of coal all stuck together. We are one big puzzle instead of a bunch of jigsaw pieces. It should go back to the United States are. Really, the states should have a lot more rights than what they do now, which is why the Constitution was written the way it is. Earlier we spoke a bit about how a judge said that you can't just harass people. It violates their Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. You know, it's kind of interesting that would actually come out, because the Constitution, for the most part, has been really washed over. Your de facto president, Obama, and his regime, he has actually said that the Constitution stands in the way of many things that he believes should be accomplished in the United, here in the U.S. And what are those things that he believes should be accomplished? Well, it all has to do with people having too many rights, and he's actually articulated that. De facto President Obama said people seem to have too many rights. We have far fewer rights and far fewer liberties now than we did 30 years ago, or we did 30 years before that, or 30 years before that, or 30 years before that. Who knows what we're going to have left in 30 years from now? Or in 60 years from now, it'll probably be all done well within that time frame. Well within that time frame. Point being, that he's actually looking at the Constitution as an obstacle getting in the way. Now, the 10th Amendment, again, as I said a minute ago, was pretty well railroaded after the Civil War. And since then, the states have been having trouble, which is why this whole thing in Montana and Tennessee is a problem. If this had gone on back in the 1800s, no big deal. You know why? The ATF didn't exist back then. All the laws on the books didn't exist back then. 20,000 gun laws across the country didn't exist back then. All right, here's a piece I've actually had, and I've just run out of time to be able to read it on many occasions. So here it is. It's called Why Americans Are Up in Arms. Leftist elites are up in arms about Americans who are up in arms. At two recent Obama town hall meetings, men exercised their Second Amendment rights, and they were spotted carrying firearms. While we did not condone threatening the president or anyone else for that matter, these citizens are well within their rights. It is legal to carry a firearm while demonstrating to protect your liberties. In New Hampshire, William Krostick showed up near a town hall meeting carrying a pistol and a placard proclaiming, "It's time to water the tree of liberty," in reference to the famous Thomas Jefferson quote, "The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of tyrants and patriots." Krostick had no intention of hurting the president. He was exercising his rights and making a political statement, using the pistol as a visual reminder. When interviewed by Chris Matthews of MSNBC, Krostick said he went to the town hall because he wanted people to remember the rights that we have and how quickly we are losing them. After making that statement, Chris Matthews verbally accosted him and compared him to John Wilkes Booth and other fanatics. Krostick clearly explained that he was not advocating violence, but was protecting a constitutional right to keep and bear arms. Now keep in mind, Chris Matthews is one of the biggest scumbag leftist pukes to ever hit the airways. I like how he says hardball with Chris Matthews, as though he's actually playing hardball. What he is he's trying to bully people. And he's just a scumbag. I would love to be a guest on his show, because something tells me if it were pre-recorded, they'd probably edit out the majority of me embarrassing him on this. I can imagine if Dave Champion were to go on there and shred this guy up. It would just be a lovely thing to watch. So Chris Matthews is a scumbag. Carrying on. The second incident prompted the media to erroneously pronounce the opponents of Obamacare as racist rednecks. A young man named Chris wore an AR-15 slung over his shoulder with a 9mm pistol strapped onto his hip. Roughly a dozen others were also carrying firearms with Chris outside an Obama appearance in Arizona. Earlier, these individuals coordinated their rights to openly carry firearms with Phoenix Police, with the Phoenix Police Department. They deliberately did this to show the country that the Phoenix Police are very supportive of their rights to keep and bear arms. The elitist media, while their whole point, and let me back this up. The elitist media missed the whole point and went ballistic. And it's rather interesting that they said that it was a bunch of racist rednecks out there against Obamacare, when in fact this guy Chris wearing the AR-15 himself is a black man. Chris Matthews fretted about assassination attempts, while Contessa Brewer stammered, "There are questions about whether this has racial overtones. I mean, here you have a man of color in the presidency and white people showing up with guns." MSNBC's pop cultural analyst Tour anxiously said, "I'm not going to be surprised if we see somebody get a chance and take a chance to really try to hurt him." However, these talking heads glossed over the crucial detail that the man carrying the AR-15 was black. They were dishonestly trying to portray the group of gun-toting citizens in Arizona as racist. MSNBC clearly edited the video footage to show only the semi-automatic rifle hiding the face of its bearer, Chris, an African-American. The liberal media conveniently ignored that in 2000, at one of George W. Bush's events, Black Panthers demonstrated while carrying firearms. The Black Panthers actually have a history of murder and violence, in contrast to the Phoenix demonstrators. The Panthers, just as noteworthy, generated no buzz at the time. They should have been referenced in light of recent events by these talking heads. The liberal media elites, outraged by gun-bearing citizens showing up at Obama events, have probably never used a gun in real life. Chris Matthews, Rick Sanchez, Contessa Brewer, and the rest who assume guns represent violence don't likely own a firearm. But Americans don't see firearms as a symbol of violence, like our founding fathers. They see them as a tool for personal protection. The founders recognized the significance and importance of firearms. Firearms standing next to in importance to the Constitution itself, George Washington movingly said, "They are the American people's liberty teeth and keystone under independence. From the hour the pilgrims landed to the present day, events, occurrences, and tendencies prove to ensure peace, security, and happiness. The rifle and pistol are equally indispensable. The very atmosphere of firearms anywhere restrains evil interference. They deserve a place of honor with all that's good." From George Washington. William Kostick and Chris have it right. If we don't stand and demonstrate peacefully for all of our freedoms, they will quickly slip away and vanish. Remember, it's much easier to hold on to something than try to get it back after you've lost it. The liberal media conveniently ignored that in 2000. That actually went back into the same thing about the Panthers. Let's see. These liberal media elites outraged by gun-bearing citizens showing up. I must have copied and pasted this twice. It's all done. All right, there we go. Sorry. Done with that. Now, I'm going to hit this whole thing about the Black Panthers. All right. The Black Panthers have a history, as we notated in the story, of violence and murder. As a matter of fact, you'll probably remember that the current H.R. 45, which is still stuck in committee and probably will never leave it, introduced by, I forget the guy's name offhand, out of Illinois, which is the Blair Holt Firearms Registration Act of 2009, which is just, it would register absolutely everything. It would give, it's totally unconstitutional because it would give authorities the ability to, the power to walk into anybody's home or business that has firearms registered to ensure that they're stored in compliance with the law. Okay, they just knock up, we have the power to come into your home, right? Anyhow, the guy that wrote that law is actually a former Black Panther. He helped form the Black Panthers in Chicago and did 10 months on illegal weapons charges back in the 70s. So we've got that to really kind of define the Black Panthers. You don't need much of a definition of the Black Panthers. You don't need much of a definition of the Ku Klux Klan. There's just, these are groups that have histories and they carry on with those histories. It's just the way it is. And almost 10 years ago, these Black Panthers showed up armed to a George W. Bush event. Did we hear anything at all about that? No. Why? Because it seems to be wrong to demonize anybody but whites and any gender other than males. You cannot demonize women, and you cannot, in this country, and you cannot demonize anybody who's of any race unless they are white by calling them a white supremacist. If you have a black supremacist, you can't call them a black supremacist. As a matter of fact, you can't even call them black anymore. You're supposed to call them African American, Asian American, Mexican American. Well, what am I? Am I a combination Euro-Native American? Is that what I am? Euro-Native Arcadian American? Is that what I am? Or maybe I'm just a Euro-American, since that's the majority of my heritage. But since life began in Africa, I don't know if anybody happened to watch this thing, The Human Family Tree, on History International last week. All life began in Africa. So wouldn't that make everyone African-American? Well, why bother throwing in the African? Why aren't we all just American? That bothers the living hell out of me. It really does. When there's an identity crisis in this country. Just the way I see it. More to come after the break. We're going to sew up the show, talk a little bit about what's going to be happening tomorrow on the anniversary of 9/11. So stay tuned through the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on RBN on 2A Radio.
Right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443. Uncle Sam's out here to
shoot me a little too well. Finger on the trigger, love. So tomorrow is the 8th anniversary of 9/11, which is, as we all remember, the day where a bunch of terrorists hijacked four different planes and crashed them into buildings, and one of them was forced into the ground in Pennsylvania, killing about 3,000 people. Not just Americans, but there's actually people from all over the world that were killed of these 3,000. Obviously, the World Trade Center was exactly that. It had people from all over the world there doing trading. Certainly people in the Pentagon. They had people from other countries and dignitaries that were there. And you had people who were passengers on these planes that were from all over. Now, of course, the vast majority were Americans. And there's several directions. I've been working on prepping on this show. And I got to tell you, there's a lot of directions that I can go on this. And one of them could be the conspiracy theorist idea, or, the government cover up, why there was problems. I got to tell you, I am more inclined to honor those who died at the hands of the terrorists, rather than to sit and try to lay blame. There are, if it were a show dedicated to any potential conspiracy theories that were going on, the show would probably last about 14 days. And quite honestly, I don't have that kind of time on my hands to actually do 14 days of uninterrupted broadcasting. And I'm not exactly sure that RBN would allow me to do a 14-day stretch. Not really in the cards. So don't, if you're going to tune in to my show tomorrow and want to hear about conspiracy theories, you're not going to hear much of that. So, you know, I would imagine that there's plenty more that going to be happening on RBN, on some of the other shows, some of the guys that are that really make a study of this. And that's fine. I am more so dedicated to the people who died, really what went on that day, and where my heart really kind of lies. And that is here, where everyone in this country really came together and stepped up to the plate, where you had tens of thousands of people swamping the recruitment lines at the military recruiting offices, just joining up in droves. People, there were lines around the block for days on end of people donating blood, donating plasma, donating whatever they could. donating food, donating clothing. I mean, the American Red Cross was absolutely bombarded by this sort of outpouring with way more stuff than they ever needed. But that's just really what came together. So that's really kind of more of the theme that I'm going to be going with tomorrow. Not so much with the idea of, well, what did Dick Cheney have to do with this? What about these planes out of Northcom? And just don't expect that out of me. There's probably going to be a couple of mentions here and there. However, there may not be. It's been difficult to figure out what direction to take this in. And I've decided I'm going to stay away from the conspiracy theorist idea because there's going to be plenty of that out there already. And that's really not my motivation. All right. What I'm going to be looking to do is handling things, dealing with what happened with the people on that day. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Dust off your flags. Have them out tomorrow. I'll see you then.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.